Quick update. I'm launching a new course for 2025. It's Foundations of Application Security. It's a two-day bootcamp covering everything you need to become a well-rounded AppSec practitioner. There's both public and private courses available, and the best part about it all is taught by me. So if you're interested, just send me an email, call@galahcyber.com.au, or say hi on LinkedIn if you can have a chat about it.
Hi, I'm Cole Cornford, and this is Secured, the podcast that dives deep into the world of application security.
We are making a difference. That means a lot to me, being part of a team that makes a positive impact on the security and safety of others really can be fulfilling.
Content warning, some discussion topics may be uncomfortable to listeners. When Sam Farabors moved to Australia from Iran, she had been working as an IT manager. While she had plenty of experience and strong technical skills, the move to Australia was challenging. And in our conversation, Sam told me about some of the barriers to entry she faced. But by attending cybersecurity events and reaching out to people on LinkedIn, Sam found mentors and peers who helped progress her career. Today, Sam is Cybersecurity Services and Program Manager for Kmart Group, which employs nearly 50,000 people across Australia and New Zealand. We chat about how to network effectively, the growth of cybersecurity as a profession in the last couple of decades, the need for greater diversity within the industry, and plenty more. So let's jump right in. I'm here with Sam. Sam, how are you going?
I am very well, Cole. How are you?
Oh, fantastic, except a bit rushed. I just came from a community risk group and talked about some really important cyber controls like patching and attack surface reduction. And then I had to rush to school because I forgot that Wednesdays is the day that you need to go to school and pick up your kids like in person proper, like actually get out the car and meet other parents. So yeah, but here I am. I'm ready to go. We're going to go podcast and be awesome, right?
Same here. Ready to rock it.
So Sam, I always ask all my guests when I jump on the podcast, what kind of bird are you and why?
I am a quail.
A quail?
Yes, there is a good reason for it. My complete name is Samane, and I am coming from Persian background. And in my language, Samane means quail. So it's an easy question for me.
It's the one-to-one like translation.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Actually, quail is just one meaning for Samane. It's not. It has different meanings, but one meaning for Samane is quail.
So what are the other meanings then?
The other meanings, it's a sky as well.
Okay.
It's quail. It's interesting. You might, in your mind, you might want to connect some a quail to a sky. It's just, yeah, different meanings. Yeah.
Yeah, flying around.
Yeah.
Persia's like, I've been reading a book, which I think would be quite boring to a lot of our listeners, but I don't know, I'm a bit nerdy. It's called The History of the Peloponnesian War by Thucydides. And it's ancient Greeks, and they were quite angry about having a war with Persia before Sparta and Athens started fighting against each other. So I keep learning about Persian history by accident by reading this book. So yes, I know a little bit about Xerxes and Cyrus and like ancient Persia, nothing to do with modern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have a great history. Yeah.
So what got you into cybersecurity? So tell me about your journey.
Honestly, I didn't expect it. It happened, let's say.
Yeah.
I started my whole journey career in IT. I started as a services person after university and then moved to more infrastructure kind of person, working in network and system admin domains prior to coming to Australia and prior to moving to security. When I came to Australia, I lost my whole confidence. In my last job in Iran, I was an IT manager, but here I felt like I'm in the middle of a black box. I lost my whole confidence. I couldn't, communicate with people. Although I knew everything from technical perspective, I knew English. I was speaking English for years, but the overall cultural change and cultural shock was huge for me at the time. So I decided to not to go through interviews for jobs. And I started looking for volunteer jobs. And I was lucky enough that I found a technical IT operation engineer volunteer job. And my journey in Australia started from there. I got involved in a major accreditation project. It was about 27,001. Yeah. Wow. Can we cut here?
But, you know, it's something I hear a lot, actually, is moving to a foreign country and people struggling with, you know, getting roles because they're different. And like, I know a lot of people, like, especially in application security, there's a lot of people who've moved from India, I know, who've come here and then they know like the tools extremely well. They're very smart people, like solid software engineers. But the cultural barriers and, you know, not willing to go out and have drinks with people after work, or not knowing that they can say no to requests from people, right? Because a lot of the time they just say yes and then just don't deliver upon it because it's like culturally rude to say no. And it, even communication, right? You know, racism still persists to this day. And I still see a fair bit, unfortunately, in my career. And I'm sure that you would have had to experience a fair bit of it too.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Cole. I'm not going through all the details about what the bad experiences yeah. I had here, because I had fabulous experiences as well. I don't want to just look into the empty half of the glass, but it's absolutely here as well. It's hard to get into the job, especially when you're a female. It's getting harder and harder. It makes everything actually harder. And when you're a migrant, it's just, oh my God, you need local experience. And even when you gain that local experience, it's still hard to, continue, because I think people have bias.
Yep.
You still have bias on different, if I know it's not recorded, I can talk about it for hours. But when I'm thinking we are recording something, it's so hard to talk about it.
I understand. Like, yeah, there is a lot of bias out there, and it's, you know, it still surfaces every single day and people are not aware of it. So I think it's actually quite courageous for you to go out on, you know, public forum and say that you've experienced this and it still persists. But like you said, not all bad things. What are some of the great things that happened in your career?
I met wonderful people who've been really helpful. I'm still in contact with them. We are friends now, actually. And they helped me a lot in different ways. They helped me a lot on understanding the business. They helped me a lot in terms of understanding the technologies here, understanding, okay, what path I need to take. Basically, their role have been like a mentor for me. And I would say that's the most great part of being in Australia, meeting great people, working with caring people, working with people who really want to see me as a successful person. And I do appreciate all the help that I get from people around me. Yeah.
I did a speech at my university a few weeks ago. I don't know why they asked me, but anyway, they did. They said, hey, Cole, you can be an occasional speaker. And I was like, what is an occasional speaker? I'll say yes, because I don't really know what that is. And I looked up and the last occasional address was given by Julia Gillard, who is pretty well known in Australia.
Wow, yeah.
And I felt that I didn't quite live up to that expectation. But anyway, I went and did it. And one of the things that I said is that I think that the metaphor that we have of having a career ladder, it implies that the ladder is quite narrow, and to climb up it, you have to climb on other people's heads. And that's, I don't think that's a very appropriate metaphor anymore, because almost all of my success comes from having other people push me up a hill. And I think that I like the hill analogy a bit better, because, you know, some different people have different hills. Like, you know, some people want to have a hill that's the size of Everest, and yeah, they can work to be a prime minister or an astronaut or whatever. And then some people are pretty content with just having all their local short climbs, right? And that's okay. You don't have to aspire to be the best cybersecurity professional or whatever. Main thing is that everyone has their own hill to climb, and the hill is not a ladder. You can help other people climb up the hills, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah.
So I'm glad to hear that you've had some great mentors in your career, because I've certainly had some myself. Without kind of naming people, I've had a fair few in my time when I was at the tax office who basically taught me, you know, that warmth and kindness are really important attributes. I'll get you a lot further than being technically correct and, you know, methodical and, you know, just elitist. It's just never going to get you anywhere. I've had other people change my perspectives about how we do cybersecurity based on business risk and business outcomes, not necessarily on just like pure technical brilliance. And then other people have just encouraged me to take risks and do things differently, because, you know, running a podcast alone, it's like, why would you start a podcast? You know, there's, you already have Risky Business and other like big security podcasts. What's the point of running your own? And it's like, well, I like talking to people. I don't think that market's being serviced all that well. So let's go out there, try something new. So having the courage to take risks. Yeah, like it's inspirational that you've been able with what you've been able to achieve. And nowadays you're working as a deputy CISO kind of group managery thing, right?
Yes, I'm cybersecurity services and program manager for Kmart Group. Like I said, I've had great mentors in my life helping me, and I would like to talk about one of those experiences that I had, because it changed my whole career. Sometimes one simple question, one simple advice can change everything for you. And I had a great mentor, and I'm still in contact with that person. I contacted her in LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn a lot, and I usually ask my mentees to use LinkedIn as well, because I'm a true believer in using that tool and using that platform basically for career improvement, getting in touch with industry people in the industry. And I contacted a person, a lady in LinkedIn, and I asked her for a coffee catch-up. I use it a lot. Just randomly contacting people on LinkedIn. Yeah, sounds not good.
No, I do it too, but half the time people look at my profile now and they say he's a salesman, so I'm just not going to accept anymore. So it's all good.
No, but I love, you know, human interactions. I love talking with people. So I do it a lot. I contacted that person, asked for a coffee catch-up, went to see her, and first catch-up, I thought, oh my God, I really want person to be my mentor. And in that first meeting, I asked her, can you be my mentor? And she said, yes. Fast forward a few months later, I received the job offer. I went to her saying, hey, I have this job offer. I don't know if I should accept it or not. And just simple question. She asked me, are you excited? And I said, I am not really excited. And she said, you're not excited now. How you expect yourself to be excited and have, you know, that fulfillment in future? And I said no to that job offer, and it changed my whole career, really. But what I'm saying is, even with just one simple question, with just simple advice, we can change people's life. And that's why I'm always seeking for advice. That's why I love touching with people. I love connecting with people and meeting them.
There you go. So everybody, you should all add Sam on LinkedIn and say hello. She will go have coffees with literally everybody. So,
oh, no.
Be a mentor to the world. So, but I know that I've had plenty of coffee catch-ups with all sorts of different people. Like, you know, really, really early in my career, it was just with university professors or my family or whatever. And, you know, middle career and so on, it was, you know, just various different like directors and people who founded businesses or head ofs and executives and stuff. And just talked a lot about, you know, all sorts of things, wherever it was like, why am I struggling with dating, right? Why is that so hard? And they're just like, okay, well, here's some genuine advice about what you need to do. Maybe you need to think about these other aspects of your life if you want that one to do well. Or it's like, why am I having so much issue with progressing at this place? And it's like, well, maybe you've been in the same technical role for so long, you're not actually pushing yourself. You're not developing the skills that you need to get to there. And nowadays, I'm in a kind of, I think a lot of people see me in a leadership position in that, you know, I run a few community events in Newcastle, you know, run a podcast. I have my own company and I pretty much say yes to whoever wants to talk to me on LinkedIn as well and make the time to, you know, actively contribute and give back to people, because I figure that it's kind of our duty and our responsibility as people have been the beneficiary of others that we do the same moving forward too, right? And another thing, I guess, is if you encounter someone that, you know, really inspires you and makes you just excited to work with that person, like, you need to follow them around and just be with them, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I know that another thing is, like, it's scary on LinkedIn to just go and approach people. You are probably going to get rejected a lot more than not.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You're not getting response from everyone you're contacting, messaging. That's absolutely right. I can't remember how many people I contacted early days when I started actively actually working on my LinkedIn profile. But just a few people responded back, which is still great. I could make lots of great relationships and friendship with those people. But yeah, that's right. You're not getting response from everyone. Yeah.
I think one thing that maybe a lot of people don't do is like how to network effectively, right? And I think that two things that are superpowers for me is if you go to community events and put your hand up and just do things, people notice and then they will tell other people about it as well. And that is a great thing. Assuming that you do something meaningful and useful for people, not just turn up and be an asshat.
yeah, no, cool. That was another actually activity I used to do a lot. Basically, I remember those days, every day might be a bit, I exaggerated here, but at least a few days in a week, I used to go to security events after work. I used to do it a lot because I wanted to build that connection with people. I wanted to understand what's happening in industry. I was new to Australia. I wanted to understand Australian businesses. I wanted to understand who is running the show here. And that was another approach that I took those days. I'm still doing it, but in a better way, in a more moderate way, because I'm super busy with, you know, actual work I'm doing. I don't have that luxury of time of those days. But yeah, that was definitely another approach.
So how did you find these community groups coming like straight into Australia? Did you just go to Google and search cyber meetups or something? How did you find these groups?
Cyber meetup, yes. Meetup application was the first starting point for me those days. Another way was, again, coming back to LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn as a source of getting information about all these community events. Yeah, these two, basically.
Yeah. And did you end up doing any presentations or talk, or did you just mostly go and network with people?
No, I didn't. It was mostly about connecting with people. And now that I'm seeing some of those events now are big events. They started a few years back with a small group of people, but now they're running very big here in Australia, and some of them went international as well.
Yeah, like I think about when I first like started going to some of these events, it would have been 2014, 2013. We had like coders group or Linux user groups, and then I moved to Canberra. We had like RuxMon, RuxCon, and B-Sides Canberra had just kind of started. And it was at the Rex Hotel. And then a few years later, it was at the Epic Showground. And then like 3 or 4 years after that, it was at the National Convention Center of Canberra. And it's like, hang on a second. This order of magnitude's gone from like, you know, 50 people in a room to like 3,000 attendees this year, apparently. So I think there's been a tremendous growth in the amount of people are interested in pursuing cybersecurity. It's now like a profession less than just a bunch of nerds who just want to kind of understand how stuff works, right? Have you seen that kind of transition over time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely, I can see more people interested in cybersecurity. Every company I'm going, I can see that pretty much all the IT people are interested in cyber. That's a trend I'm seeing everywhere. Everyone wants to get into cyber. And previously, we went to the events, we could see just maximum 20 people, 30 people attending those events. But now if you go even for the smallest, you know, events, you can see more than 30 people sometimes attending those events. So I definitely can see the shift here. And I want to touch on another aspect of this shift, which is about having more women and having more females in these events.
Yep.
Because one experience I had previously those days was, I clearly remember that I was the only woman attending that event. I believe that was an event from ASC or an organization like that.
Yep.
Facilitated that event. And I was the only woman in that event. And it was so scary and frightening, really, for me to go to people and say hi. And I was just listening to the speaker, not talking with anyone. And very carefully, slowly, I started talking with people in that event. But now that I'm looking into the events, I can see much more women attending the events, coming into the industry. We have great groups of women supporting each other and working with each other to add more diversity to cybersecurity. We need definitely more diversity and inclusion to cybersecurity. And I'm not just talking about having more women in cyber. I'm talking about having a diversity in thought in cyber. We need people with different backgrounds. We need people from different technical backgrounds. We need developers coming to security. We need people from infrastructure, even from other sides of the business, finance, even marketing. We need that diversity of thought more in cybersecurity, because we are basically facing with hackers, we are facing with those people out other side of the fence that are from different thoughts.
Yeah, ultimately, cybersecurity is a business risk and something that businesses need to make decisions about. And businesses are not just IT systems. They're people, they're processes, and sometimes technology is involved as well. And I think a lot of technologists forget that that is the third part of the business, not the most important thing. Is businesses are built by people to serve people. And it's very rarely that businesses are built because they want to do cool techie stuff, right?
Yeah.
Some kind of outcome for it. And I know that traditionally a lot of cybersecurity has come from, you know, like you yourself came from IT service help desk and infrastructure and networking before moving into it. But I'd say that there's like a lot of people who definitely are coming into the sector from, you know, all sorts of backgrounds nowadays. I was at one of my clients' offices recently and I met one of the senior executives there, and they came from primary teaching backgrounds and then came into cybersecurity. And they basically figured that one of the reasons it was really difficult to influence culture and stuff is because there was no standardized method for actually approaching an awareness and training it, like a syllabus to approach it, and then a way to actually get this ingrained in people and assessed over time, which is something that came from their education background, right? And, you know, one of my close friends who was on the podcast, Toby, he said he studied gender studies at university before he realized he couldn't get a job, right? But I'm sure that that would have helped him have an extremely different perspective coming into security than someone who just went, all right, computer science, Java, C#, software, like, you know, kernels, and then suddenly they end up in the workforce in the grad program and they're talking about Fortinets, but they're never talking about, why do we need firewalls? What does it actually mean for my business? Isn't this actually causing a user experience problem? Why are we doing this? You know, so that diversity of thought's really important.
Absolutely. Yes.
And women as well. Like it's a significant issue. I have seen it improve. It's something I'm hyper aware of and want to do what I can to help improve representation there as well, especially amongst women in leadership positions, right? Because I think AWSN did a survey a few months ago and it was like 18% of the workforce is women or people who identify as women. We're never going to reach parity, but we do need to work on improving that. And that number slides dramatically as soon as you go into leadership, right? And I think that If women don't see other women in leadership positions, who are the role models and mentors that you're going to aspire to be like, right? So we need to do what we can to elevate and help other people move there and look at ways to actually remove impediments and obstacles and reasons to make people want to not be in the sector. Like in Newcastle, we have a community group called Women and Gender Diverse People. And I've been to it a few times. And one thing I can tell you is that being just single one or two men in a room of like 40 to 50 women or gender diverse people is probably exactly the same feelings of like, you know, I am out of my comfort zone. This is not my environment. I do not belong here. And you would have had exactly the same moving, going to those initial cyber meetups too as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's completely true. Yeah. And I believe there is much more impact on not having female leaders in decision-making roles, because ultimately we are building solutions for just 50% of the population here. If we are not having females on boards, if we are not having females in senior management levels, we are not that much thinking about if our solutions, if our products are fit for our women and females as well as men. And sometimes it gets lost, really. What I'm trying to say is the benefit of having females and women in top management, senior management, and board levels is not just for the sake of ticking the HR criteria and goals and just saying that, okay, we have 50% women in our organization. The impact is much more important than just a number.
Yeah, I think that if anyone's looking at doing, you know, tokenization, that is like literally the worst approach, because then that person's going to feel even more isolated. I feel like the hardest one is to go to 0 to 1.
Yeah.
And then having that one person feel that they are meaningful contributor to the team and that they were hired for their expertise and for being able to perform that role really well and not being just a number. Because if you are just a number, that, like, I imagine a lot of people feel really, really upset about that and probably look for roles elsewhere, right? Ones that actually appreciate their talents and expertise. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how's it feel being a woman in leadership actually for yourself? How are you inspiring the next generation of ladies to move into cybersecurity leadership?
I've been trying to be more present and be more involved in different community conversations and be a better supporter for women in technology. I made it my goal and my mission, let's say, a few years back. Each year, I spend some time just for mentoring programs, just for helping women in technology, helping women in general to get into the workforce. And most of the time, what I'm seeing is people, again, same as my own personal experience, they lost their confidence. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help them to regain their confidence, that level of confidence that they need to work. And something else is most women, they feel like they need to be perfect to be acceptable, but that's not the case. And sometimes they feel like they need to tick all the boxes, then they are a valuable member of the team. But we know that is not true. So I made it my mission to help those women to understand their values, to regain basically their confidence and come back. Sometimes coming back from the long leaves back to the work again and building that connectivity, building that connection again with the industry, with the technology people. I try to connect them sometimes with different people that I know in industry. And that's my way of helping women at the moment.
I think it's good if people are listening to this to just go and have a chat to any of your colleagues who happen to be women or people on LinkedIn. Go message them. Go speak to university professors who are researching this subject. There is a lot of content out there about how we have been trained to write job descriptions that are suitable for men. And so, like you said, if a woman applies for a job, it's because she ticks 9 out of 10 boxes, when a man who may get the job may think he only gets 3 out of 5, like 3 out of 10, and just say, yeah, whatever, I'll see, give it a go anyway. And obviously that you just lose a tremendous amount of candidates at that point when they would have been suitable for that role. And bias in language and words and also not appreciating the kind of skills that, you know, separate men and women. So I know, you know, like women are generally extremely, like, much more studious and level-headed than men in a lot of situations and good at remaining calm and collected. So that could be your next SOC manager, a calm and collected woman who's ready to go and just have a look internal as well. You know, you don't have to go, you can find other people in other disciplines and bring them across to cyber, right? Get that diversity of character in, yeah?
Yeah. And one more thing, Cole, about, especially about the women in leadership positions. I feel like we want to see everyone as the same personality, type of personality, but we have to accept it that women have a different way of leading teams and have a different way of leadership, and they take different approach in comparison with their men colleagues. So we shouldn't actually put the lens of men leadership when we are looking into our female leaders, because they have their own way of leading and they have their own way of management, and we shouldn't compare this in the same way.
Yeah, I have to say that my best managers were definitely women. So shout out to Fiona and Erica. I hope you two are listening, because I really appreciate your guidance and mentorship. I wanted to cover some of the more technical parts of what you've been doing. So, because the cybersecurity podcast too. So what kind of part of cybersecurity makes you really excited?
Cybersecurity is a constantly evolving landscape. It's changing every day. And this dynamic environment keeps me on my toes and requires continuous learning and adoption, which I really enjoy it. And another exciting thing about cybersecurity is we are solving complex problems in cybersecurity, in puzzles, and getting involved in investigations on cyber attacks, which is exciting. And we are making a difference. That means a lot to me. Effective cybersecurity measures can protect significant financial losses for companies, and being part of a team that makes a positive impact on the security and safety of others really can be fulfilling.
Yeah, those are all great reasons. So it's the basically all the reasons that I'm in my discipline within application security, which software engineering moves a bit faster than cybersecurity does. But so applying cyber principles to software engineering, it makes me really excited personally, because I love the rate of change and constantly keeping up with it. The purpose thing, though, is really important to me as well. Because if I look back on my career, I started in basically the government and, you know, I was effectively protecting Australian citizens from cyber adversaries, right? That was really important to me. You know, I moved into banking and I was protecting, you know, the financial, like, safety of people around Australia as well. Moved into tech and it was like globally protecting people who were petitioning authoritarian governments and wanting to change what they're doing. And recently with my own business, it was... Now I have this like grand idea, which is probably a little bit silly, but I love it anyway, which is to effectively secure the software that powers Australia, right? And I jumped into it because no one else is really tackling application security across the entire country. There's lots of pockets of good little work where people are struggling internally and stuff, but I figured that why don't I just go out there, really raise the profile of this issue and do what I can to just help organizations around Australia and potentially the globe, but I'm going to start domestic first, right? Because you're a true blue Aussie, right? So you've got to have that purpose inspiring you in your career, yeah?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, it's important.
Cool. All right. So I've got a couple of fast questions for you. So question number one is, if you were to give a book to someone, what would it be and why?
Wow. That's a difficult question.
Tough one.
yeah. Because I love books. I love reading books. And it depends on the person. If I know the person and if I know the person's interest, then I would go with that person's interest, definitely. But if I don't know that person, again, it depends. If the person is working in technology, I would say Phoenix Project.
Yep.
Probably for people in technology. And for people outside of the technology, I would say Untethered Soul from Michael Singer.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a book in spirituality and domain.
So why would you give each of those books out? I love learning about books. That's why I ask guests about them all the time. Even if I don't have the time to read every book, I will still try.
Phoenix Project, probably because that was one of those books in technology that I read, which resonated with me a lot. And I could relate to all the issues, challenges that they wrote in the book. That was the reason for Phoenix Project. And Untethered Soul, because it was touchy a lot when I read that. It was during the pandemic here. Probably that's why I still remember it. I think everyone should read it, really. It's talking about how we can manage the voices that we are having in our mind, how we can heal, basically, the wounds that we have. Yeah, all Michael Singer's books are great books, if someone is interested.
All those inner demons that we have that are telling us every day, you know, that you're not good enough to do this kind of thing, or you're not smart enough to get an OSCP, or you can't go and do this presentation in front of these executives because you're just not a good communicator, right? It's a challenge, taking those fears and challenging them and having a process to deal with them is a really good thing to bring up.
Yeah.
And I always like recommending the Phoenix Project as well for people who are looking at careers in AppSec, because a lot of the challenges that are brought up in there around, you know, DevSecOps and why cybersecurity never seems to work, it's just, it helps people kind of put things into perspective about the outcomes and challenges that businesses are going through, and then what kind of security controls and like measures that teams have been trying to take to meet that challenge, right? So always recommend the Phoenix Project if people wanting to learn a bit more. Cool. So, Sam, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate your time. Where can people reach out to say hello to you and maybe have a coffee?
Oh, yeah, definitely. They can. I'm always open for good conversations with people. Thank you so much, Cole.
No worries. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Secured. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Don't forget to follow the podcast on your favorite platform and leave us a review. Want some more content like the above? Why not subscribe to our newsletter at galarcyber.com.au/newsletter and get high-quality AppSec content straight to your mailbox. Stay safe, stay secure, and we'll see you next episode. If you're new to the show or a seasoned veteran, I want to hear from you. I'm always looking to do better as a podcast host and as a person. So tell me about what I can do better. Tell me about the types of people you want on my podcast. Tell me about if the format's working for you or styles need to be switched up. Do I need to interview differently? So on and so forth. I appreciate you sticking with me for almost 30 episodes at this stage. And I hope I can keep learning and you can keep learning and being entertained for many more episodes to come. So please shoot me feedback. I want the good, the bad, and the ugly to pod@galarcyber.com.au. And if you don't like email, hit me up on LinkedIn.